It's November 5th, 2022. Ward Green here. 08:15 hours. This is back home again in Indiana. 1979. Oscar Peterson and Niels Henning Ørsted Pedersen.
Thank you.
Okay, that was very beautiful and interesting to see Oscar Peterson and his, you know, longtime bass player, but not his first bass player, and not his only bass player, certainly, but his namesake, in a sense, Peterson being, I suppose, he looks Danish, that name, Ørsted, looks Danish to me. We can look him up, though. But this was in the Netherlands, in The Hague, at the jazz festival there, the North Sea Jazz Festival. I guess the building is called the Congrès Gabouv. Whatever that name would be, I believe that's probably Dutch, that language that name Gabouv is in, whether that's how you pronounce it, Gabau, Gabou, Gabouv. Gabouv, that's a building, probably, the building in which they were performing. I wanted to ask you something, and that is, okay, would you chase $500 for 1 hour? If you could get $500 in 1 hour, but you'd have to chase it. You know, you'd have to, if you knew that you'd have to do something that would take up a whole hour to get that $500, would you spend that 1 hour on getting even if you knew you could get $500, would you spend that 1 hour to get the $500? And the reason I'm asking is because if you multiply, let's say you live 100 years long, like your life is 100 years long. 100 years times the number of days in a year, 365.25, and then multiply it times the number of hours in a day, 24. And then multiply that times $500 per hour. And you get $438,300,000. $438 million. So your life is worth, in that case, $438 million. Dollars. Did I actually have that on cam? Probably not. Let's just say, yeah, there we go. There we are, yeah. $438,300,000. Are you happy with that? Would you be happy if your life were worth $438 million? That's what I want to ask you. If your life is worth $438 million, I mean, that's not, for most people, that's not a small amount of money. But wouldn't you rather your life to be priceless? Wouldn't you think that your time would be, far better spent if it were priceless? You know, if every minute was worth an amount of money that was, you know, infinite, that you wouldn't be able to, that you wouldn't want to, not that you wouldn't be able to, but that you wouldn't want to sell a minute of your life for any amount of money because it was so precious. So that's the question, because that's why it's not right to chase money. That's another reason, but for one thing, we know the Bible principle that if you chase money, money sprouts wings and flies away toward the heavens. So there are many reasons. We've covered a few other reasons at least, but there are many reasons why we shouldn't chase money. But this other reason I just mentioned is, how valuable is your time? How do you esteem your time? You see, if you esteem your time at $500 an hour, then your life is only going to be worth $438 million. At 100 years. Now, if you live forever, how much is your life worth then at $500 an hour? It's worth an infinite amount of money, right? If you live forever, $500 an hour forever is an infinite amount of money. But the problem with that is, how are you going to live forever if you're spending your time chasing $500 an hour? And, you know, how are you going to have time to get everlasting life? How are you going to have time to find out what food you need to eat to get that everlasting life? You know, what vitamins or what exercises you need to do, or what different things you need, what all things you need to do, what all the things are that you need to do, you know, to get perfect health and then keep it, and to have and to regenerate, have your cells regenerate in your body, so that you don't, so that they never die, like your body never dies, so that your cells never stop reproducing. We don't know why. Nobody knows why the body, but why any person or why any animal or why anything dies. We don't really understand it, because we don't know how the cell works in all its intricate detail. We just don't know everything. We never did. And we don't even know how photosynthesis works, which is a very beautiful process where the plants can take light and convert it to energy. Light from the sun is converted into energy, right? And there are chemical reactions that some of which we understand, but we don't know all of it. We don't know how photosynthesis really works in plants. That's just one example. But if we don't know that, how can we, well, obviously we don't know how the human body works, but how could we if we don't know photosynthesis? You know, it's just obvious. We don't know things, and we don't know enough. So what we should be spending our time on then, it would appear, to me at least, I hope to someone else besides me, is figuring out how to live longer, healthier, and happier. But, you know, longer and healthier, that would be happy, seems to me, but it's a combination. That doesn't mean without any, you know, effort or, well, in this system too, right now we do have pain. There's going to be pain probably too, right? But if we had perfect health, maybe there wouldn't be pain. But there's going to be pain. There's going to be some things along the way trying to learn how to get this higher quality. Really, we're looking for higher quality of life, right? We're not really looking for quantity of life. We're looking for quality of life, which we couldn't have if we were chasing $500 every hour. That wouldn't give us quality of life, no matter how good our job is. If we're sick, if we're dying, if we have infections, if we have disease, we're not going to be having quality of life. So quality of life is the thing I'm talking about. And I think, but also, if our life is very healthy, then that vastly increases the probability of us living longer, and therefore being happier, and, you know, accomplishing more, all sorts of things are so. Therefore, I mean, it feeds into itself. So if we live longer, even if we don't live to be more than 100 and whatever, if we live longer, that gives us more time to find out how to live even longer. Because the amount of learning that we get in one lifetime is difficult to pass to someone else. Even though we do have scientific journals and scientific things writings that we can, you know, pass on to people to help them, we can't really pass our learning to the next generation, even if we were a father passing it to our son or our daughter. We can't pass everything we know. We could probably pass a lot of it if our son or daughter is willing to learn, but it is impossible to pass all of it. In this current system, we don't know how to do that. But the longer we live, the more we can learn about how to do everything. Because one person can accumulate more information during that longer lifetime. So that's that. It seems to me that's what we should be chasing, and not money. You know, unless you're satisfied with... I'm certainly not satisfied with a life that's worth $438 million. Because that wouldn't solve the world's problems, would it? Even if my hope is to live for 100 years. But my hope would be probably far longer than that. I live far longer than 100 years. That's assuming that, you know, that the world carries on the way it is. So let's look at this boot here. These are my old Merrells. I don't think I showed you. I wanted to show you this. I think I forgot to show you. My old Merrell boots. These are they. And look at this. I'm going to show you what happened to the heels of these boots. Maybe I can show you this. I hope so. Yeah. Yeah, right. There they are. So you see this, how the heels are worn more so on the outside, outside of this heel here. It's worn down more on this side. That's because I supinate, so my heel goes this way. It tilts down and that wears out this side of the boot. And the other heel, it does the same thing. So, yeah, it goes this way and this side wears down more. You can see that, I think. Yeah, clearly. Definitely, it's worn unevenly. Right, and you can see it very clearly. So, but these are my old Merrells, and they're not in really completely, you know, total shape. I mean, they're not in complete ill repair. I mean, they're in good repair. Actually, there's a spot on one of the toes. What's that? What's that spot? That's not actually a spot. Let me put that one boot down. It's just this. It's just a bit of dust. Looks like on the... These are suede. But this is the toe that had this little spot on it. Just a bit of dust or something. It's not actually anything, you know, permanent. There's no damage here on this toe. It might be damaged somewhere on these boots, but it's there's not really... Yeah, apparently there's no damage. There's none that I can see on these two boots here. Yeah, okay. They're in remarkably good shape, I think, for how old they are. And how old are they is another question. They're size 8, men's, U.S. men's size 8. And you can see the uppers. Actually made of fabric uppers. On these boots. Okay, turn them. Yeah, and they're in amazingly good shape. Hang on a second. Why does that look so uneven? The two uppers look different in size, but one is just more wrinkled than the other, or folded up, but they're in excellent shape, actually, these boots, I think. I thought that these boots, maybe, I wonder if I had another pair. I thought I had a hole in one of my boots. So that makes me think I had another pair of Merrells, because I did have that other pair of insoles. So maybe there wasn't another pair of Merrells, because I had a pair of boots where the toes had some kind of, you know, a little bit of a tear, and I had to, I glued it with goop, or I think. But these are not they, because they don't have that. So that makes me think maybe there was another pair of Merrells. There must have been, actually, because there's another pair of insoles. But now where those other Merrells are now, I mean, they might be in the basement still. It's interesting. I didn't think I had I really didn't believe I had two up till now, two other pairs, or two pairs other than the new ones I have, which are in amazing fit condition, but they're in great condition because they're brand new and they're an amazing fit also. So the Bible, today we don't have to do Isaiah. We don't have to do Isaiah today because we've done Isaiah 15 already. We did it wrongly when we should have done Isaiah 5. But now it doesn't seem so wrong, does it? Because we don't have to do Isaiah today. Does it seem wrong? I don't think so. If we get a day off, it's not really so wrong. Yeah. Psalm 35 is quite a significantly long psalm. Again, it's David writing this. And then we'll try and do John 15. I am the true vine, Jesus said, I believe, in that chapter. That's a famous scripture that I remember well from that. But by the way, the weather, before we start, the weather, they changed the weather to make it even more days in a row of no precipitation forecast. So now they're saying it won't be until November 11th until we get rain. And I don't even know what time on the, I mean, they don't say when in the day. It might not even be during the daytime, right? It might be at night. So it might be more than it looks like that we get, but there's a special weather statement coming. Oh, wait, okay, let me see the special weather statement. Special weather statement update. November 5th. Strong winds tonight. Okay. Strong winds. It's a warning. So we got to tie everything down. I'm going to bring in my... I'll bring in my chairs from the deck if they're not brought in yet. I think I have chairs out there that could just blow around. And I got to winterize that, so that I'll bring them in like I always do. Early this evening, we're expecting... They're expecting winds, high winds, up to 80 kilometers per hour. It's pretty strong. Not hurricane at all. It's not hurricane, but it's... Well, it is getting up there. Wait a minute, that's 50 miles an hour, isn't it? See, to get from miles per hour to kilometers, you multiply by 1.61. And to get from kilometers to miles, you multiply by 0.62. Those are the conversions. 1.61, which is easy to remember because there's a 1 at both ends. And the other one's 0.62, which is easy to remember because the one that has the 1 at both ends is not the same as the one that has the 2 at the end. So it's 0.62 to multiply kilometers to get to miles, because obviously miles are bigger than kilometers. So there won't be as many of them as there are kilometers. So you've got to multiply by 0.62 and make the number smaller to convert from kilometers to miles. So... 80 kilometers would be 80 kilometers, we multiply by 0.62, or we divide by 1.61, whichever we want to do. So 80 times 0.62 is 49.6, which is 50. 50 miles per hour. 50 miles per hour, that is getting up toward, I mean, hurricane, 60 miles an hour is sort of hurricane. That's, isn't it? It can be. I think that can be the tail end of a hurricane, 60 miles an hour. That's a lot. 50 miles an hour is a lot of wind. So anything that's not tied down should be tied down now. That's what that says. And don't be outside either, if you don't want to get blown. So... That's a warning that we've got. So that means I probably won't be trying to do anything in the afternoon either, because we don't know if it's going to arrive sooner than what they're saying. Or I'll want to do, if I want to do anything, and I should do it in the morning. And I'm thinking about doing many different things I need to do, including shopping at some point. I'm trying to organize it. Trying to figure it out. But the next day when we're looking at the forecast, the next day, ignoring this, or not ignoring it, but putting that aside for the moment, the next day where we're supposed to have rain is the 11th. So today's the 5th, and we've got 5 through the 10th is 6 days inclusive. 6 more days of near-perfect weather with a lot of sun in there. A lot of sun, apparently. Or quite a bit of sun in within that period of time. And the temperatures are going to go down, though, on the 8th, it says. It'll go down maybe 7 or 10 degrees even. It'll get colder. But then it might warm up again on the 10th. And then it should start to get colder after that, where we start to get some more winter and freezing weather. It should freeze on the 8th, though, is what they're saying, the frost. So, but the forecast got better, and it should not be this good in the first place, but it got better, not worse. So, but we could get rain at any time. They could change the forecast. We could suddenly get bad weather. This wind is coming. That's scary, because we have to know, you know, we need to know we've got everything buttoned down on our house or whatever we want to do. I've got things I could do outside, like cleaning my siding and raking leaves and trimming trees and, you know, all sorts of things like that. Indoors, I've got things to do. I can sharpen my chainsaws and stuff like that. I'm investigating getting a chain sharpening device, you know, like a grinding device, whatever they call those. Maybe they have different names for them, for some of them, but a chain sharpener, you know, with a grinding wheel on it. I've been looking at those for a while now, but you know, I'm not committed to that yet. I do have a couple of different steel sharpening file devices, each of which has 2 different files in them. 3, actually. Each of these devices I bought has 3 files in them. 2 flat files in each of them. I mean, 1 flat file in each of them. 2 flat files altogether, and 4 round files altogether. And the round files are not all the same size. They're the same size. They're 2 different sizes and 4 files altogether. So 2 of each in these sharpening devices, plus I have other flat files that I own also. So I could do square filing if I wanted to, if I thought that was the way to go, but that's a lot of work to change my file, change my chains over to square. I'd have to do a lot of filing the first time, but you know, that's a possibility at some point. But I might get one of these grinders. A chain sharpening device, you know, an electric grinding wheel. The only thing that's stopping me is I don't know how do you run the chain through the device. I don't understand how easy it is to do it. Like, yeah, I think if it were really easy, if I didn't have to learn and anything, you know, if there were no way that it could fail, or if there's no way to buy the wrong device, you know, if there's no way that, or if the, also the other fear I have is the device will fail on me, you know, that it won't last a long time. So if I could buy a device that's going to last a long time, and also that it's cost a lot of money, yeah. If I could buy a device that were not expensive, that would last a long time, that was easy to use, obviously I think I'd go for it right away if I knew that, right? If I didn't have the problem of the learning curve and all of that. It just slows down the purchasing decision when you have a learning curve. You know you have a learning curve coming, and that slows down. It should slow us down, I think, and it does. Slows me down, certainly. I'd like to own any device that would make my life better and easier, right? Trimming a few hairs here. But knowing that, you know, but we don't know that it's going to make our life better or easier. That's the problem, right? And I don't do much chainsaw work in the first place, so I don't do a lot of it, but I'm doing more and more as the trees grow. It's just something that's ongoing. I'm continually progressing in many areas, and one of them is arborist work, studying trees and how to properly get them down. I'm thinking that ropes might be one of my techniques. I might use ropes if I could sling the rope over the branch and pull the tree or over the trunk of the around the trunk and pull the tree in the direction I want it to go. And of course, if the trunk's big enough, I'll be doing wedge banging too. I'll use wedges. The tree the other day was not big enough to use a wedge, I don't think. In retrospect, I thought about it. How would you get a wedge? There's no room for the wedge because the blade was taking up all the space in the tree, right? So I had no room to get a wedge in. I wanted to get... But what I needed was... if I just... I had no time. I couldn't wait to try and get a rope around the tree because I didn't want it to fall down and maybe hurt somebody if anyone happened to come along. I wanted to get the tree down right away, so I cut it down, that's all. I cut the tree down to free my saw that was pinched, but I could have just slung a rope around this tree and I easily pulled this tree because I could almost pull it with my hand. It was a 5-inch trunk, so I could, you know, it was a small tree, but I wasn't heavy enough. My body weight wasn't enough to be able to pull the tree the way I wanted it to go. It was already cut. It was cut. It was completely cut, right? Anyway, there's nothing wrong except I annihilated one of my rakers on a brand new blade, on a brand new chain, I mean. And that I don't think will necessarily affect that chain much, if at all. But the other one got a 6 or 7 significant dings, you know, damage to the in the main cutters. Plus, it's a skip tooth chain, so it's got other teeth that are also undoubtedly damaged. Double the number, probably, of whatever I said, 6 or 7 plus multiply times 2. There might be 14 different teeth that need more than a little attention. And then, well, you know, but I need to work on that chain to try to get that back. There's nothing probably really completely wrong with that, or, you know, wrong enough that I have to throw that chain out or anything, or, you know, discard it or, you know, scrap it. I just think it does need a lot of love to get it back to its optimal condition, but, when metal meets metal, you know, it's not good for the cutting what do we call it? Other than cutting edge, what do we call it? The cutting, it's not a cutting surface, obviously, it's a cutting edge. There's got to be another word for that. Well, the cutting edge of the tooth in this case, it's certainly not good for it to come up against steel. And it's interesting that I think the rakers are a softer steel than the cutting edges of the blades of the teeth. Yeah, the cutting edge of the teeth. I think the rakers are softer steel. That's how it could annihilate the raker and not annihilate the teeth entirely of the cutting edges of the teeth. Oh, I got the heat on. That's the problem. We don't need the heat on right now. That way, I'll have to put my hat back on, and I'll have to button up because I got to make sure I stay warm here. Yeah, I don't need the heat on. See, if I weren't making a video, I wouldn't be distracted. I would have noticed the heat was on. I would not have taken my hats off, thinking I needed to do that because I would have realized I needed to turn the heat off. But when you're doing more than one thing, when you're distracted by people who don't know what the situation is, then that throws you into a different entanglement, right? I talked about quantum entanglement the other day. And for me trying to teach somebody what I know, it's not going to happen overnight. I can't teach you in one hour or 1 minute or 1 day everything I know. It's not possible. So you can never understand. In fact, you're never going to know everything that I know because my DNA is different. So we're going to know different things. We never learn each other. We can learn our own world or our own selves only. We can't learn the other person. We can get to know them better, but we can't learn everything about them. So there's no hope. In fact, there's no hope to learn everything about ourselves even. But I can never teach somebody else why I do things a certain way, or, you know, to someone else, people have often thought that I'm going to die because my situation, it looks like I'm dying, or that I'm about to, you know, be in a dire situation because they don't understand how I do things, or they don't know how well I understand anything. They don't know. They don't know what solutions I might possess in my arsenal of wisdom. They don't know what I'm capable of. No one knows what I'm capable of. Not even me. But Jehovah knows. That's the thing. That's why Jehovah is very important. Jehovah knows what I'm capable of. Right? And Jehovah actually has created me in his image. And that's why I can be like Jehovah. Jehovah is inside me. You know, he's a part of me, I mean. He's not inside me. He's a part of me. He's imbued me with a part of himself, which is that love. The capacity for that love. That's what he's imbued me with. That's what I've been imbued with by virtue of the fact that he created me in his image. But that's true of anybody, man and woman. All men and women are created in the image of God. But, I mean, you know, I worry. But you shouldn't, I mean, it's good to worry, but not excessively. It's good to worry a little tiny bit, and enough to make sure that you consider in advance. Like, I was worried about my big tree, and I eventually cut that big tree down because it was so ominous, and I thought it's going to fall on the house eventually. I had to cut it down, and it was a 19-inch trunk. The widest part was about 19 inches, excluding the bark. So it was bigger than 19 with the bark, but it was, you know, it was 19 inches, which is a sizable tree to grow right near my house. It was a big tree. So that was a saw that I cut down with a 14-inch blade, I think I had at the time, or maybe I had a 16-inch at that time. Maybe I'd upgraded the blade. Yeah, I think it was a 16-inch blade. But I'd never cut a tree down of any size. Well, I had. I cut trees down, maybe they weren't quite that big, but I'd cut quite a few trees down. When I worked in Edmonton on construction, clearing lots, or, you know, we cleared at least one lot anyway, a couple of lots maybe. So I did operate the saw for some of that time. I had experience, but not cutting down a tree like this on my own property near my house. So, but I did it because I researched how to do it. I just had to, so because I haven't done it much, I have to, every time I cut a tree, I should do research. But this 5-inch tree, I thought, well, I can cut that down. And I could have if I just let it fall the way it wanted to, but it would have fallen across the drainage ditch into my neighbor's yard, and I didn't want it to fall that way, so I was trying to make it fall the other way toward my side. But I didn't do any planning on that one because it was only a 5-inch tree, and I shouldn't, I, whether I should have or shouldn't have, that's irrelevant. The point is I didn't, but I can. If I want to make things go successfully, I can plan, you know. I can plan a little bit about how I want this to go or how it might fall and which way it will fall. Figure out which way it will fall. Make sure not to do it on a really windy day unless the wind's, even if the wind is going in the right direction, it's just not good to work in high winds. You know, it's just better to work in calm conditions, not raining and so, you know, it's better. By the way, when I record the audio, on the MacBook Pro speakers, the other last day when I did it, the first day I've ever done it for this particular purpose, I had the volume a little too high. It's got to sound really quiet to me in order for it to record loud, because the microphone's very close. The microphone's over here. The microphone's near the laptop, so when I'm playing the music, it sounds to me very quiet, but it records quite loud. So, and I get a much less bass, less bassy sound when I record on the MacBook Pro, but it's not. It's better because there was too much bass coming from the Bose speakers, so. And there was no way to prevent that. I couldn't. Even if I cut the bass all the way to zero on my amplifier, it still doesn't help. Because those Bose speakers are just full of bass. They're just huge in bass, in the bass response. So now I've got a way to record music much better through the MacBook Pro without setting up anything more complicated, just using a laptop to produce the audio, and the laptop microphone records it. The microphone of the laptop is doing all the recording. In any case, whether it's coming from the other speakers or the laptop itself, the microphone is still always the one. That's the microphone that I'm using, the laptop, the M1 Max, MacBook Pro 16-inch laptop with the microphone. By the way, I don't think Amazon refunded me. Yesterday, they refunded me something, which I didn't send back, but they refunded it to me, saying I'd sent it back. So either somebody sent something to them, or they just refunded me this money. But this is a sign of goodwill on their part. That's how I'm taking it. You know, it's a no reply email they sent me. Not to reply to it. I could always contact them if I wanted to, I guess, but I don't know how to. There's no way that they indicate, right, to contact them. So I'm taking it as a sign of goodwill, but I would never do anything against Amazon, because Amazon is the hand that feeds me. I would never blame them for $400 loss, because they feed me. They're literally feeding me in many cases, but they're sending me many other products besides food. I mean, they're the hand that feeds me, so I would never, you know, do anything against Amazon, I think. But I would never do anything against anybody, is the truth. But Amazon might not know that. But obviously, even more so with Amazon, I would never do anything against them, because they're the hand that actually feeds me. So whatever happened in the case of the package that's missing, that's $400 or $500 that I don't have any interest in, whatever it is, it's of no consequence. And the advantage is, I now have one welding table fewer than I would have had if it had arrived. And that means I have more space in the workshop. Whenever they're set up, whenever my table is set up, I don't have to set up two tables. It saves me time. But the other thing is I have more space. I've got more reasons to rearrange my shop to get more space back. I've got things figured out better now. I'm not set in my ways. But the even far greater reason why I like this, not having that second welding table, is because I get to rethink everything and say, well, what should I have done better? What could I have done better? What will I do better now? What will I do now? I can redesign the whole idea. I can buy a different device and incorporate that with the first welding table and make it better than it would have been with two welding tables, right? I mean, I can redesign. I talked about this yesterday. It's a second lease on life. It really is. It really is. That's how it should be looked at and viewed. You know, that's how I believe it should be viewed. So Psalm 35. So everything is a good thing. And my dad taught me this. Everything is a good thing. It's only in how you turn it to your advantage and how you look at it that makes it an advantage or a disadvantage. It doesn't matter what it is. You can turn it into an advantage, right? Like if you're, let's say you've been injured and you're crippled, let's say. Well, you could turn that into an advantage because you could then help other people who were injured or who were crippled, inspire them by what you do. That's one example. You know what I mean? But it's if you know what I mean. Some people probably don't know what I mean, but no, you can actually turn anything. If you were addicted to drugs, you know, that's a terrible thing. Everyone thinks drugs are bad, and to be an addict to drug, you know, to be a drug addict is horrible. Most people think about drug addicts as, you know, they're terrible. It's a bad reputation to be a drug addict. But you can turn it to an advantage in the sense that you can help, at least in that way, but maybe more. But you can help other people by becoming a better person because of it. You can understand and empathize with other drug addicts who are currently drug addicts. Help them. We're all drug addicts if we've ever been a drug addict. We have to continue to be aware of our predisposition and avoid it. But we can understand and empathize with other drug addicts, help them to quit, help them to become something stronger, someone stronger, and something that's, you know, to become something that's a force for good in the world. That's what we can help do with any of our things, our bad things that have happened to us. We can turn them around. We can turn them into an advantage. Always, 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 everything is an advantage. That's what I was taught, and that's what I teach, and that's what I continue to learn. Doesn't matter what it is. In fact, in many ways, these things that go wrong are the biggest blessings of all. There's no question about it. In many ways, that is true. And you only have to look at some examples to see that, of people who've completely turned their lives around and become an inspiration to other people. Just look at those people. And don't be prejudiced about things, about what other people are doing or what they may be like or what you think they're like. Don't be prejudiced because you don't know. But one thing you do know is what they're capable of is enormous. That we do know. Each one of us has this enormous potential within us. And there's no doubt about that. We have enormous potential as human beings because Jehovah, he causes us to become. That's the other thing. I thought about the word becoming, right? He's the force that causes us to be more than we are. That's what love does. That's what he is, love. That's what we can be like too. We can cause others to be more than they are. Because we're like God, we have God in us, Jehovah is part of us. We can cause others to become more than they are. That's what love is that force that causes us to become more than we are. It's not some nameless evolution mumbo jumbo nonsense, random chance garbage nonsense that's irrelevant. It has nothing to do with randomness. It's always a logical force acting to make us more than we are. It's a positive force. And that takes away all worry. It takes away all of our worries. Even though the devil and the demons are still trying their utmost to get us away from that love, you know, to separate us from the love of God, Jehovah, you know. And Jesus. Jesus is the example of the human being for us. So the devil and the demons try to get us away from Jesus and away from Jehovah and so on. What time is it? Oh, the time is gone. Of David, Jehovah, help us to read today's study with open ears. Help us not to be concerned overly much with what the words are saying, but to retain the words so we can learn later on better about what they're saying and use them for good in our lives, in Jesus' name. Amen. So Psalm, we have no time here. We've got to read these things now, essentially. We've got a little time. But Psalm 35, of David, do conduct my case, little children. Do conduct my case, O Jehovah, against my opponents. War against those warring against me. Take hold of buckler and large shield, and do rise up in assistance of me. and draw spear and double axe to meet those pursuing me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. May those be ashamed and humiliated who are hunting for my soul. May those be turned back and be abashed who are scheming calamity for me. May they become like chaff before the wind. Before the wind, and let Jehovah's angel be pushing them along. Let their way become darkness and slippery places, and let Jehovah's angel be pursuing them. For without cause they have hid for me their netted pit. Without cause they have dug it for my soul. Let ruin come upon him without his knowing, and let his own net that he hid catch him. With ruin, let him fall into it. But let my own soul be joyful in Jehovah. Let it exult in his salvation. Let all my bones themselves say, O Jehovah, who is there like you? Delivering the afflicted one from one stronger than he is, and the afflicted and poor one from the one robbing him. Violent witnesses rise up. But I have not known, they ask me. They reward me with bad for good, bereavement to my soul. As for me, when they become ill, my clothing, when they became ill, my clothing was sackcloth. With fasting I afflicted my soul, and upon my bosom my own prayer would return. As for a companion, as for a brother of mine, I walked about like one mourning for a mother. Saddened, I bowed down. When they became ill, I walked about like one mourning for a mother. Saddened, I bowed down. But at my limping, they rejoiced and gathered together. They gathered together against me, striking me down when I did not know it. They ripped me to pieces and did not keep silent. Among the apostate mockers for a cake, there was a grinding of their teeth, even against me. O Jehovah, how long will you keep seeing it? Do bring back my soul from their ravages, even my only one from the maned young lions. I will laud you in the big congregation among a numerous people. I shall praise you. O may those who for no reason are my enemies not rejoice over me. As for those hating me without cause, let them not wink the eye, for it is not peace that they speak, but against the quiet ones of the earth, things of deception they keep scheming. And they open wide their mouth even against me. They have said, Aha! Aha! Our eye has seen it. You have seen, O Jehovah. Do not keep silent. O Jehovah, do not keep yourself far from me. Do arouse yourself and awake to my judgment, O my God, even Jehovah, to my case at law. Judge me according to your righteousness, O Jehovah my God, and may they not rejoice over me. May they not say in their heart, Aha, our soul! May they not say, We have swallowed him up. Let those be ashamed and abashed altogether who are joyful at my calamity. Let those be clothed with shame and humiliation who are assuming great airs against me. Let those cry out joyfully and rejoice who are delighting in my righteousness, and let them say constantly, Let Jehovah be magnified who takes delight in the peace of his servant. And let my own tongue utter in an undertone your righteousness, all day long your praise. That's Psalm 35. The beginning part, I thought it said ashamed, but it says in verse 4, may those be shamed and humiliated. And then later on it does say, in verse 26, let those be ashamed and abashed. And it also says, let those be clothed with shame and humiliation. But look what happens to those who are against David. Whenever David becomes sick, they're trying to do things to make it worse for him. They gather together at his limping in verse 15, striking him down when he's not suspecting or expecting it, when he doesn't even know that they're doing anything. But on the other hand, when they're sick, he walks about like he's grieving his mother, and he's sad in verse 14. When they became ill, I afflicted my soul, verse 13. He is kind to his enemies, right? That's amazing. And they're completely ruthless with him toward David. His enemies toward him are ruthless. And yet he is loving and kind toward his enemies. That's what we learned from that Psalm 35. It's quite astounding, really. John 15, but remember Jesus said you must love your enemies. We're commanded to love our enemies, not just our fellow disciples, although the love between disciples is magnified because we love each other. That's the difference, right? But we have love among the disciples, more so than the love between us and our enemies, because our enemies don't love us back. But we love our enemies. John 15, I am the true vine. This is Jesus still speaking. Let's go back to 14. What he said last. Get up, let us go from here. He'd washed their feet. And Judas Iscariot went out. 13. When did Judas go out? Right. He gave the morsel to Judas Iscariot in John 13 and 26. And then the devil entered into Judas, and Judas was confirmed as being the betrayer of Jesus. But Judas, then, after he received the morsel, he went out. Verse 30, he went out into the night. And when he went out, Jesus then spoke, and he started to speak in 13, and then he spoke more in 14 of John, and then, now we're in 15. He said, get up, let us go, but now he's still speaking. Maybe he's speaking as they walk. I am the true vine, and my Father is the cultivator. Every branch in me not bearing fruit, he takes away, and every one bearing fruit, he cleans, that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word that I've spoken to you. Remain in union with me, and I in union with you, period. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it remains in the vine, in the same way neither can you unless you remain in the vine. In union with me. I am the vine. You are the branches. He that remains in union with me and I in union with him, this one bears much fruit. Because apart from me, you can do nothing at all. If anyone does not remain in union with me, he is cast out as a branch and is dried up. And men gather those branches up and pitch them into the fire, and they are burned. If you remain in union with me and my sayings remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will take place for you. My Father is glorified in this, that you keep bearing much fruit and prove yourselves my disciples. Just as the Father has loved me and I have loved you, remain in my love. If you observe my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have Just as I have observed. Why is that so hard to say? Just as I have observed the commandments of the Father and remain in his love. You will remain. That's hard to say too. W's and R's and V's and B's. You will remain in my love just as I have observed the commandments of the Father and remain in his love. If you observe my commandments, you will remain in my love. You will remain. If you observe my commandments, you will remain in my love just as I have observed the commandments of the Father and remain in his love. That's not easy to say. These things I have spoken to you that my joy may be in you and your joy may be made full. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. We had that commandment already. No one has love greater than this, that someone should surrender his soul in behalf of his friends. You are my friends if you do what I'm commanding you. I no longer call you slaves, because a slave does not know what his master does. But I have called you friends, because all the things I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I appointed you to go on and keep bearing fruit, and that your fruit should remain, in order that, no matter what you ask the Father in my name, he might give it to you. These things I command you, that you love one another. If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were part of the world would be fond of what is its own. Now, because you are no part of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, on this account the world hates you. Bear in mind the word I said to you. A slave is not greater than his master. If they have persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they have observed my word, they will observe yours also. But they will do all these things against you on account of my name, because they do not know him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin. But now they have no excuse for their sin. He that hates me hates also my Father. If I had not done among them the works that no one else did, they would have no sin. But now they have both seen and hated me as well as my Father. But it is that the word written in their law may be fulfilled. They hated me without cause. When the Helper arrives that I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of the truth, which proceeds from the Father, that one will bear witness about me, and you in turn are to bear witness because you have been with me from when I began. That's the end of John 15, but look at this. They hated me without cause. That's Psalm. We just read that in Psalms. Psalm 35. That was today's study. That's incredible. See, that's Jehovah doing that, because I had no idea that that was the case. Consciously, I didn't know that. Those hating me without cause, right there. Interesting. Psalm 35 and 19. We've got that right there. Right here. Right here. And if we click on that, we can do that. In the JW Library app, we can see that that has references too. Let's see what those references are. Psalm 69 also, in verse 4, those hating me without cause have become even more than the hairs of my head. That's the reference in John, possibly. Also, right? Very positively. And then John 15, which is there, right here, John 15. We can click on it. There it is. They hated me without cause. So the references are there. we can sort of scroll back and forth and back to where we were. In the JW Library app, we can do that. Click on the cross-references at the end, the superscript at the end of each sentence. We're in the middle of a sentence, possibly, wherever this, at the comma. At a comma or semicolon, there might be a superscript with a letter, superscript. Those letters can be clicked on, and you can find out what the cross-references are to that. And just because there are cross-references doesn't mean those are the only possible cross-references either. There may be other places in the Bible that correspond as well that aren't mentioned in these notes. I've found many others, many examples where the references given are not the entire list. So, that is pretty phenomenal. From Jesus, he's reiterating this concept. You must have love. I command you to love each other. You love one another. I command you that you love one another just as I have loved you. Just as he loved us. And he did miracles. He healed people's grave, grievous illnesses. He healed them. And of course, later on, those people, same people who were healed, they died later. Lazarus was resurrected, but he died later. Again. But Jesus had this amazing, incredible, unbelievably powerful love in him, the power of which gave him the power to heal people from sicknesses that were, and death, from death. He could heal people from death. He could raise them from the dead. I mean, that's power. That's a lot of power, but it's the power of love. It's not some occult, mystical power at all. It's from Jehovah. Remember the blind man said, you know, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing at all. John, that was John 9 and 33. If this man were not from God, he said. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing at all. That's what the man said. The man who had been blind. And his parents had said, he was born blind. John 9 and 20. His parents said, we know he was born blind. But Jesus was able to make this man seeing again. He was able to restore the man's sight. That's incredible power. It's believable because we know it's the truth in God's word. But it's incredible in the sense that normally we would never, it is rare. There are medical miracles. There are doctors who see these miracles sometimes. There's no doubt. We hear stories occasionally where a doctor says, that's a miracle, and something happens. We know it does happen. There are miracles. They do happen. There are absolute miracles, but they're rare, right? But Jesus had the power to actually do them. Like at will, he could, seemingly at will, but Jehovah acting through him, somehow these miracles were performed. They didn't just occur on their own, but they were performed by Jesus. The love that he had was able to do these things. And he didn't just do nothing. If we look at this, he spit on the ground in verse 6 and made a clay with the saliva and put his clay upon the man's eyes. That's what he did. And he said, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And he came back, and the man had his sight restored after that. The man could see. So, among all the other things it does for us, giving us faith and so on, it should also give us some faith in the idea that maybe we can learn how to heal some kind of illnesses, or maybe many kinds of illnesses of our own, by learning about nature, not about pharmaceuticals, but about nature and the things that, about your, learning about Jehovah, learning about God and the creation that he gave us, how we can use the creation to benefit us, including with the vitamins that are given to us, that are present in our food. They're in our food, these vitamins. And we can't always get enough vitamins from food, but we can also eat food and then supplement the vitamins. But we can supplement vitamin C. Some vitamins we can take without food. We can take vitamin C without any food. Although I've generally eaten it with I take vitamin C with sugar, or with whatever sweetener it comes with. But if it's chewable, it has sweetener in it. But if it's too bitter and you can't take it without sugar, you can use some kind of sweetener. I suppose you could use xylitol or erythritol if you don't want to use. I would prefer to use one of those rather than sugar, because sugar is addictive, and I don't want to get hooked on that again. But if I was sick, though, I could justify using whatever way I needed to get the vitamin C into my body, even if I had to take sugar to do it, to help me get to be able to make it. I don't think it would be impossible to drink something bitter. It's just a bitter taste. I don't think that's difficult. I don't think I'll need sugar to do that. But to get vitamin C ascorbic acid or ascorbate into your body without sugar, it's just going to be very bitter. So you can sweeten it somehow and use whatever you need to sweeten it. But I would stay away from artificial sweeteners or chemicals that are not naturally derived. And stay away from whatever you know is not good. But you want to get, I know sugar is not good, so I might want to stay away from sugar, but because I now know that it's not good. But if you don't know that yet, then you're not going to feel bad about it as far as using it. Yeah, I really appreciate when people say things like, get yourself a tea or coffee. Instead of saying, go get yourself a coffee, they say, I appreciate that they say, get yourself a tea or coffee, whatever you prefer. So they're not, you know, I appreciate that they're not saying coffee is the only thing that you can drink, you know, because the world is so committed to coffee, generally. I wouldn't say, not necessarily addicted. They might be, I don't know. But they're committed to coffee, so, and for those of us who don't drink coffee, it's every time it's like a slap in the face, right? If every time we see that, they're completely insensitive to the people who don't drink coffee. But I mean, we know, and so I very greatly appreciate that when somebody appreciates that we don't all drink coffee. But I really love I love my tea. It's matcha tea, but I also have green tea. I can drink green tea. I don't generally drink it anymore because I don't just drink tea. I eat tea. The matcha tea is edible. I eat the tea in my lattes. And if I made matcha tea, I'd still be eating it, because you eat the actual ground up leaves for matcha tea. You eat that. And it has enormous nutritional benefit. I was just going to say benefit, but it's nutritional. It has all the phytonutrients, PHYTO, phytonutrients. And yeah, and all the provisions that Jehovah gives us, we should take advantage of. I was thinking, I wish I could say in the words of the immortal Ronald Curzan, I don't think I could say that maybe, but I'd like to be able to say that. This is Ward Green. It's November 5th. Yes, it is. November 5th, 2022, 9:32 hours. That's 0932 hours. And we're done for the day as far as the study goes. We can do other things today. I might wear my old Merrells today. I'm looking forward to... there's probably going to be, or possibly going to be, a monthly JW broadcasting, possibly, I don't know, coming out. I'm looking forward to possibly myself making more videos, maybe even today, I don't know. But, I mean, I'm looking forward to the wearing of my old Merrells to find out what they're like. I'm also looking forward to finding out whether I worked 3 years or 4 or 5 years as a tennis instructor. But regardless, I think a tennis instructor is not really a real job in the same way that I really felt like that was my first job as a lab preparation assistant for my biology teacher in high school. That felt like my first job. In my memory, it does, so in some ways. But maybe that was because maybe I did work 5 years as a tennis instructor. I feel like I did, but if I did, I was, the thing was, when I was 13 years old, I came second in the Ottawa tennis tournament, 14 and under, and I still had 1 year of eligibility beyond that. And I was runner up in the Ottawa City tournament, and I came from a small town in Deep River, 100 miles away, that was... We had nothing in the way of, we had some good teachers, but we didn't have, you know, we had one good teacher, especially Stuart McAlpin, a good example in Stuart McAlpin. We had some good, decent, you know, instruction, but nothing like Ottawa had. So I was runner up, and the final went to three sets. I was 13 years old. So I was a decent tennis player when I was runner-up in Ottawa at the age of 13 with 1 year of eligibility remaining. So I could have been an instructor at the age of 13. There's no doubt. That was the summer, though, that I was 13 years old. So that would have been, if I'd been instructing that same year, that's possible. I mean, it's credible to me, because it's plausible to me, because being an instructor might have given me confidence that would help me to win a set, to take a set from the eventual champion that year. We're at our limit. I love you. Bye for now.